Call the meeting to order. My name is Representative Kent Eakin, the new chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. Not only is this my first time chairing the committee, this is my first time on the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. But I'm looking forward to a productive session. I'm hoping that we'll have one that has lots of a good debate and discussion and good policy that comes forward. I do hope that the debate and discussion is conducted in a respectful manner, and hope that we're able to really make some progress this session. First thing that I'd like to do, maybe just to point out a few of the procedures here and some of the policies, some important policies to remember. We will have a 24-hour rule for amendments, so we would like that to be the day before. You do have this in your emails, by the way. The procedures and the policies were emailed out. So please try to get all amendments in 24 hours in advance. If members do not have the amendments ready beforehand, you'll have to bring 50 copies that will have to be distributed at the time of the committee. Also, if you have any items in your folders that you'd like to save, there is a saved section. For those of you who are new, please put those in the saved section, things that you want to keep. Also, if you want a hearing on a bill that's been referred to our committee, please put in a written request for one, and we'll try to get you on the agenda. Also, cell phones. Of course, you probably hear this in every committee, but please turn cell phones off before the committee starts. With that, I'd like to just go around and do introductions, and I've already introduced myself. Again, Kent Eakin. I represent District 2A up in the northwest part of Minnesota. I represent all of Norman County, all of Menomon County, most of Becker County, the southern parts of Polk and Clearwater counties. I have all of the Wild Rice Watershed District. I have a constituent, a friend of mine down today, who was the chair of the Wild Rice Watershed District, Warren Sikora. I also represent the White Earth Nation, which is located in Menomon and Clearwater, Becker counties, and also Lake Itasca. So I share that with Representative Brita Saylor, actually. So, with that, I'd like the other members to introduce themselves and what districts they represent, where they come from, and we can start off moving around this side of the room.
Sure. I'm Tony Cornish from live in Good Thunder in Blue Earth County, and I have Faribault County, Blue Earth County, and Waseca County, a border Iowa down there, 18 small cities in three counties.
Kathy Reinhardt, 23B Mankato. Tony and I are neighbors. I have the city of Mankato and surrounding townships and just a tiny little sliver of North Mankato.
I'm Joe Hoppe from Chaska, 34B. And I guess I've been on the Environment Committee my two previous terms here, and I'm looking forward to another 2 years.
Jean Wagenius from far south Minneapolis, generally between Diamond Lake and around Lake Nokomis. This is my passion, and I'm glad to be here.
Sai Tao, I represent part of St. Paul. I live two blocks that way.
You're on this committee?
I am. Being in this committee, I should walk to work. I could say I did it once.
I'm Dennis Hodgson from Rosemont, Eastern Apple Valley, and been on the Environment Committee for 20 of my 22 years.
Representative Tom Hackbarth, I represent Northern Anoka County and part of Sherburne County, the city of Elk River, District 48A, and I'm starting my sixth term.
Brita Saylor, District 2B, way up north. I've got the western half of Hubbard County, almost all of Beltrami County, the part of Clearwater that Kent doesn't have, and a little bit of Polk and Pennington. And I'm going into my second term. This is my first time on this committee. I've been involved with a number of environmental issues in the past, so I'm looking forward to this.
I'm Paul Gardner from 53A, way up north on the edge of Ramsey County.
I'm Dave Olin. I have the true northwest corner. I represent Kitson County, Roseau County, part of Marshall County, and the most votes in Pennington County. Pennington County split three ways, so I just claim the most votes. Representative Frank Moe, Bemidji, District 4A, but Bemidji all the way over almost to Grand Rapids and then south to almost the Brainerd Lakes area.
Sure, I apologize for being late and some members as well. I'm Carlos Fabiani from St. Paul. I've got what's called the west side of St. Paul, which is really geographically the south side of St. Paul, but that's St. Paul for you. I have the capital, the downtown, the capital area downtown, and I have the wonderful Mississippi River cutting right through the middle of my district.
Hi, Kathy Tanglestead. I represent part of Anoka County, a huge area between 94th Avenue and 136th in Coon Rapids and Andover, and starting my sixth time on this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Beth Scalzi, and I represent Little. I come from Little Canada. I also represent Little Canada, Vadnais Heights, Southern Shoreview, Eastern Roseville, and one of the smallest cities in Ramsey County, Gem Lake, which is mostly a lake. And we're all in Ramsey County, just a small geographic area. This is my second term and my second time on this committee. Glad to be here.
David Dill, I represent 6A, which is Lake Cook in St. Louis. And to be familiar with that, you need to think of the North Shore of Lake Superior up to International Falls, almost to International Falls, Voyageurs National Park, and the Boundary Waters, where it seems that everybody from down here wants to go.
I'm Rick Hansen, starting my second term. I represent Northern Dakota County, including Mendota, which is the meeting of the waters, where the Minnesota and the Mississippi join, and the river rafts around my district. And I'm also of West St. Paul, which is south of the west side, where Carlos represents.
Representative Hansen is also the vice chair of this committee, so he'll be filling in if I'm not here. Next, I'd like to introduce some of the staff. First of all, my staff is A.J. Dewar, who is my CLA, and my CA is Kirk Kudelka, sitting to my right. And I'd like the other staff members, if you'd just introduce yourselves, we'll go around.
John Helen, legislative analyst with the House Research Department.
Bob Eliff, also with the House Research Department.
Mark Nicely, Republican Research.
And at the pages, we have two pages as well, if you'd like to introduce yourselves.
My name is Dave Ryan, and I'm the committee page. So.
My name is Kristen Bonhorst. I have some experience in my background in biology and conservation. So I'm open-minded and very interested to hear from all the country.
Thank you. I believe we've covered everyone. Is there anyone else? Okay, well, thanks.
There was someone else.
She raised her hand. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Eileen. I'm sorry about
that.
Thanks, Eileen. Next, today what we're going to be doing is just hearing an overview from a couple of different agencies we're going to be dealing with. We'll be dealing a lot with Bowser and also with the DNR and with the PCA. Today we are going to be hearing from Bowser and also from the DNR. And first up, we're going to be hearing from the Board of Water and Soil Resources. We have with us today Mr. Doug Thomas. And if you could state your name for the record and position.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Doug Thomas, Assistant Director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And thanks for the opportunity to be here today and to give our agency overview to the committee. Before I begin, I'd like to make two quick introductions. Steve Woods over here. Steve is the other Assistant Director with Bowser and somebody that you'll probably be seeing off and on this year. And the other person I'd like to introduce is our soon-to-be new executive director. As many of you know, Ron Harnack retired. You'll actually see him back in another capacity working for the Red River Watershed Management Board. But, John, if you could just stand up. John Jasky will be joining us on January 22nd as our new executive director. The board's purpose is and mission is really fairly straightforward. It's to protect, restore, and enhance our soil and water resources on Minnesota's private lands, which make up just about 78% of the landscape. And I think that statistic is important, and I'll touch on that in just a minute. We accomplish that purpose, that protection enhancement of our resources on private lands, through a couple different things. First, the state soil conservation policy, a number of comprehensive local water management acts, and lastly, the state's Wetland Conservation Act. As I said before, in terms of the importance of that mission, since 78% of the land is in private ownership, our mission and the role of local governments that I'll be talking about later that actually help us carry out that mission is critical if we're going to attain our goals of clean water and abundant fish and wildlife habitat. We can't produce those goods and services that we are talking about if we don't address 78% of the landscape of Minnesota. And that's, again, so I think it makes that mission of ours a very critical one to the state. It's these working lands, our farms, forests, and urban areas, which are become our primary focus when we think about implementation of our agency programs. I thought it would be useful just to touch on a few of the major concerns that we as a board are dealing with and are going to continue to deal with. Certainly soil erosion on both our agricultural lands and in our forested areas during forest operations and during urban and rural development, new development, is still considered the most significant or single largest source of non-point source pollution, and the subsequent sedimentation that occurs from that erosion is also considered a significant pollutant of our state surface waters. Secondly, managing nutrients, both nitrogen and phosphorus, is critical to the state as it relates to both the impaired water strategy that we have in terms of cleaning up our state waters, as well as the contribution to downstream areas. And an example of that is the hypoxic zone in the Gulf of Mexico, which is nitrogen-enriched water coming from the Mississippi River Basin, causing oxygen depletion and a dead zone to occur. We're part of that contribution, so we have some responsibility to be looking at how we're part of the solutions on things like that. Also, a continuing role in assisting feedlot owners in the state in meeting the obligations that they have under the state feedlot rule and helping through voluntary means and technical assistance bringing those feedlots into compliance with the state's feedlot program. And then lastly, protecting the state's remaining wetlands through implementation of the State Wetland Conservation Act, while at the same time trying to have a major focus on the restoration of wetlands, particularly in those areas of the states where we've had the greatest losses. We have a number of counties where, you know, pre-settlement, they have maybe 1% or 2% of their pre-settlement wetlands. Regulation there is going to not gain us a lot, but what we really need to do is focus on restoring those wetlands that we've lost in some of those landscapes, because that's a major resource concern of ours and a major focus of what we try to do. Just to take a little bit and touch on our agency organization, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, as affectionately known as Bowser, and I think our current board chair is fine with that acronym, was a result of a merger of three boards in 1987. At that time, there existed three independent boards, the State Soil and Water Conservation Board, the Water Resources Board, and the Southern Minnesota River Basin Council. Those three entities were merged together in 87 and resulted in the new Board of Water and Soil Resources. We're overseen by a 17-member appointed board. And that board, as you can see by the map that you have in your handout and on the screens, is broadly distributed across the state. The 17 members are made up of three county commissioners, three soil and water district supervisors, three watershed district managers, three citizens, and the five agencies, including DNR, PCA, Department of Ag, Department of Health, and the University of Minnesota. Over half of our staff, which is a relatively small staff, are located in seven offices outside of St. Paul. And our primary, we're linked statutorily to the state's 91 soil and water conservation districts, 46 watershed districts, a number of joint powers water management organizations in the metro area, and counties and cities through local water management and through the State's Wetland Conservation Act. So we do have that statutory link to those organizations, therefore their representation on our board and their participation in the policy and program development that occurs within Bowser and within the board structure. I provided a list of all of the statutory authorities. I am only going to highlight just a few that I think are fairly important roles that the board plays. The second bullet from the top, talking about our role again in directing a private land soil and water conservation program in the state through the action of our soil and water districts, counties, cities, townships, watershed districts, and water management organizations. The fourth bullet down, providing resolution of water policy conflicts and issues. Our board provides a very unique structure that's outside of the courts, outside of that litigative process where individuals and local units of government can bring issues that they have regarding water law and policy in the state, and we provide a forum where they can talk about that, and we can reach some decisions and provide some input into some of those issues, which is, I think, quite unique. And then third from the bottom is providing a forum through the board for local issues. Being able to have local government, our local partners, have the ability to bring their issues forward, and then for the board to be able to incorporate those into state public policy through our work with you as a legislature and our work with the governor's office and the administrative process. Our business model, I'd like to point that out just for you because we think it's a fairly unique model that capitalizes on a large local government delivery system with over 450 employees across the state located in those local governments that I talked about before. We operate with a small agency staff, just over 60 staff. And then I think with our board structure, we try to and I think are able to many times accomplish that balance between local resource needs and state plans and programs, trying to avoid that one-size-fits-all concept in state agency programming and how we work and do business. And then lastly, our ability to leverage significant federal and local dollars through that structure and through the model that we have. I've mentioned a number of times our local government clientele, and so I want to just take the next couple slides and talk a little bit more specifically about them. Our state soil and water conservation districts, there's 91, they're statewide, they have elected boards, and in most cases they're co-located with the U.S. Department of Ag Natural Resources Conservation Service, which helps create that very powerful federal, state, local partnership, which allows us to capitalize on things like the conservation title of the Farm Bill and trying to meld and bring those federal resources, state resources, and local resources together. We also work significantly with the states, with watershed districts and water management organizations. Specifically with watershed districts, they were created in 1955. And they were really created in response to a public law, which was called the Small Watershed Protection Act, which Congress passed in 1955. And that act recognized the need to have a watershed-based approach to a lot of the country's flooding and drainage and water problems that were they were experiencing seeing across the country. Recognized that a small watershed, not the huge river basins, but smaller watersheds, organized at the state level, given appropriate set of tools and authorities, could go a long ways for through partnering with the federal government through the FEAL 566 program, a means in which to address watershed protection at that time. And that was really the genesis of our watershed districts in the state. They are watershed-based. They're created in response to local petitions, and they respond to problems that extend beyond political boundaries. And so when you have those situations occur in the state where the local government structure is no longer capable of addressing that water issue by together cooperatively, this mechanism provides an opportunity for your local governments or citizens to say, we need a little higher level of management, and this is a mechanism that's available to them to help bring some unique resources and some unique authorities to help with those problems. And they're also very instrumental in implementing a lot of large capital works type projects that some of you may be familiar with around the state. I'd like to move on and just talk a bit about how we achieve our goals. And we do that in terms of our goal of clean water, maintaining productive soils in the state, providing abundant fish and wildlife habitat. We do that through our statutory responsibilities, the incentive-based programs that we offer and provide to local governments, the regulation of wetlands under the Wetland Conservation Act, and more recently, our role in implementing the state's Clean Water Legacy Act. I'd like to shift and just kind of give you a feeling of our range of Bowser programs and the things that you may be dealing with from time to time as issues relating to some of those programs come up. The first one is our state cost share program, and that's basically a program that provides financial incentives and technical assistance through soil and water conservation districts to support landowners developing and implementing erosion and sediment control projects, water quality projects, and feedlot pollution control systems. Our RIM Reserve program, which dates back to 1986, is the state's largest private lands conservation program or easement program that we have in the state of Minnesota. And I'll give you some numbers about the accomplishments of that program later on. It's significant in that it was designed, again, with a private lands focus, with the goal of retiring marginal ag land from production, those poorest, most environmentally sensitive lands, improving water and soil resources, establishing new wildlife habitat, increasing that public and private investment in long-term conservation and resource improvements. And it includes our ability to leverage a couple federal programs, which we commonly call in Minnesota our CREP program and our REP program, which is simply RIM coupled up with two federal programs, the Conservation Reserve Program and the Wetland Reserve Program. We do office a state soils office. We do that, or we lead that effort in cooperation with the University of Minnesota, with the goal of increasing the usefulness of our current soils data that we have in the state, continuing to try to finish the completion of a few counties that are left that don't have modern soil surveys, updating outdated surveys. Some of those original soil surveys date back to the 1970s, and they're in need of updating. And then the last is to try to develop ways to provide that information electronically in useful formats to the broadest audience we can through the use of a number of kind of web-based tools that we're presently working on. Engineering and technical services is also a role that we have, which we provide direct assistance to local governments, really at kind of those projects which exceed the scope of their technical capability. Things like designing wetland restoration projects, specialized large lake and coastal engineering along the North Shore. We also participate with the NRCS in the development of standards for soil conservation practices and oversee grants to soil and water districts to support their non-point engineering and technical assistance efforts at the local level. On the local water management front, we've had a number of things in the state that we kind of collectively call our local water management programs. Again, the first really true watershed-based local water management was 1955 with the creation of the Watershed District Act, which requires those entities to develop comprehensive watershed-based plans. In 1982, we added the metropolitan area where the legislature mandated the creation of watershed organizations and the development of surface water management plans. That was followed in 87 by the Metropolitan Groundwater Act, which basically created the authority for counties in the metropolitan area to develop, adopt, and implement comprehensive groundwater plans. And actually right now we have 4 out of the 5 have adopted plans. One has a plan but just hasn't formally adopted it and submitted to the state because they don't want to. In 1985, that basically whole concept went statewide with the Comprehensive Local Water Management Act. And right now we have 48 counties and 32 soil and water districts that lead that effort. The whole goal of those are to prepare, adopt, and implement those comprehensive plans at a local level with state assistance and state oversight. I think it's important to note that those plans are all in place. We're not talking about a planning program per se anymore. Those plans are all in place. They're updated occasionally, but right now the current focus is really on implementing those priority projects that are identified in those comprehensive plans. Wetland Conservation Act, you can see the number of entities. I think it pushes close to 340-some-odd entities are out there implementing the State Wetland Conservation Act that was created in 1991, and at that point it was an expansion of the limited wetland protection that we had in the state, which was limited to public waters wetlands, and was expanded to all wetlands in the state. It created a very unique state-local partnership to do that. So it's not the state's responsibility to receive and issue permits and application. That actually occurs at the local level. It's enforced by DNR conservation officers and local peace officers. SWCDs are required to assist in and support mitigation efforts. And we provide the oversight and the technical assistance and also financial assistance to those LGUs that are carrying out that responsibility. Clean Water Legacy Act, this is again new for us last year. We were one of kind of four primary agencies. And the act kind of, because of the emphasis on non-point source pollution and because of Bowser's role in directly working and our primary clientele being those local governments, us along with the Department of Ag are kind of the lead agencies when we talk about the non-point strategies for restoration and protection in the Clean Water Legacy Act. I think kind of one of the things that was unique in that is the recognition of not trying to create new bureaucracy, the idea of using existing programs but adding new money, and I think we've been very successful at doing that this past year. And it also basically said ensure that there's agency and coordination, and that's been another major focus of ours in this first year of implementation. Just to kind of show some of the quick results on that, because it's something that is relatively new. We had a first ever joint agency request for proposals, which is the first time that that's happened in my 17 years working with the state. We also then followed up that with multi-agency evaluation and allocation of funds. And as you can see, we had 181 proposals requested $44 million for assistance. And we actually only had that application period open for a couple months because we were trying to really fast-track things this first year. So I think it really shows the demand and the need and the interest that's out there on the part of local governments to get involved and to take advantage of funding opportunities and to begin to implement restoration projects and protection projects. We were able to fund 51 projects with just a little over $8 million that we were appropriated to do that. And roughly 67% of all the funds went to restoration activities in the 12 TMDL project areas that have state-approved plans. And that is only going to grow in the future. I'd like to, just before moving into talking a little bit about some of the issues that we think are going to come before this group this year, just talk just a little bit about accountability measures. We've tried to build those into all of our programs over the year. And we do that through eLink, which is a name that we've given to a web-based electronic reporting system, which allows us, through reporting that takes place by those local governments that are getting those dollars, implementing those projects, where we can track the location, the estimated pollution reduction, and the benefit of those projects as we think about things like soil loss or erosion, sedimentation, the reduction of sediment that is getting into our lakes, rivers, and streams, and phosphorus reduction, which we actually can do a pretty good job of. We're working on trying to add some of the pollutants to that, but that's going to take some additional research and time in order to do that. Just to kind of talk a little bit then about our ability to deliver that conservation on the ground through the programs. As I talked before, we have the RIM program, the largest state easement program. Since 1986, we've enrolled just under 5,000 easements, 179,000 plus acres, 280 square miles of habitat, both wetland and prairie, that has been created through that state private landowner partnership. In some of the types, you can see marginal cropland, a little over 15,000 acres. Those lands that are adjacent or immediately riparian to our streams, ditches, rivers and lakes, just under 68,000. A few sensitive groundwater areas, primarily in southwest Minnesota, associated with some of the rural water systems down there. Just over 81,000 acres of wetlands restored, and some miscellaneous others, which are like hillside pasture and a few other kind of small things that we pick up. On the land and water treatment side, I talked a lot about our cost share programs, our financial assistance programs. This map is just designed to kind of illustrate for you our ability to track not only at a county level but at a watershed level. And in this case, we're showing the estimated soil loss reduction by minor watershed for all of the projects that reported back to us in 2004 and 2005. I think it gives you a good idea to show that partnership again. Just over 3,200 projects were implemented or reported. Total cost of over $16 million. But significantly in that is almost $4 million of land occupier costs. Every one of these projects that we do, the landowner has to come to the table with some financial participation on their end. So we're actually leveraging both not only state money, but landowner money, as well as you can see in the case of some federal grants and federal loans as well. Just a couple other things to illustrate that, our local water management programs, we help support in a number of education projects, resource inventories, monitoring projects, and feedlot initiatives and the like, as well as we also have a grant that's specifically identified for feedlot water quality management improvements. In the two-year period, we did 71 projects, which reduced phosphorus loadings to adjacent rivers, lakes, and streams by just over 6,000 pounds per year. And I don't know if it's real accurate, but I keep hearing people talk about that a pound of phosphorus will grow 500 pounds of weeds in a lake. So it's certainly significant at a local level, and then we start adding up year after year of these projects, it becomes significant at a regional and a state level as well. And just to wrap up with some of the challenges and opportunities that we have, and to leave you some thoughts about the issues that may become before your committee this year, I'm going to kind of skip over impaired waters. Needless to say, that's going to be a large issue from a funding perspective this year, but there may be some spin-off things that relate to some of the policy language last year. I think just a quick message on our part is that list continues to grow. That's creating an expectation for change out in the landscape, which creates a growing demand for some of the voluntary incentive-based approaches that we have, increased demand for financial assistance, increased demand for just services in general. The federal farm bill, people kind of would say, well, why is the state interested in that? That bill is reauthorized every 5 years. It's up for reauthorization in 2007. It expires roughly, I think, September, October of 2007. I can't remember the exact date. We've had a part in that because the conservation title, and I won't run through all that alphabet soup there for you, those programs bring $50 million a year into Minnesota to support private lands conservation. And so it's a very significant amount of money. So that farm bill and that conservation title is important to the state of Minnesota. Bowser, along with the other agencies, have been part of a Clean Water Cabinet effort to develop a state position on the Farm Bill, and that is something that's continuing to be worked on, and I hopefully will be finalized here in the near future. Some of the challenges that I think we're faced with the Farm Bill is the last Farm Bill changed or reduced the federal cost share rate from 75% to 50%. And what that has had an impact of is the most expensive projects to do, the grass waterways, the erosion control structures, the stream bank stabilization projects, are not getting done anymore because of that lowered cost share. So we look at it as how do we try to work with our state programs to try to leverage and piggyback those programs to try to get some of those more enduring conservation practices implemented around the state. Also, we have a shortage of technical assistance. Right now, NRCS tells us we have a $32 million backlog of projects that are on the books, but we don't have the technical assistance to put those on the ground in the next 18 months. The challenge that we have is that if we cannot show and demonstrate our ability to put those on the ground, we are soon to probably see the federal government say, look, Minnesota, you know, why are we giving you all this money? If you're not getting it spent, we're going to send it somewhere else. Right now, we're third in the nation in terms of conservation title spending. We'd like to stay that way because I think it's very important for our natural resources. And then, again, I mentioned before some of the opportunities for leveraging in the Farm Bill through the Conservation Reserve Program, the Wetland Reserve Program, ability to leverage technical assistance through a number of things called contribution agreements, and another activity called Conservation Innovation Grants. And so that's why we see that as an emerging issue and something that possibly this committee may see from time to time in terms of issues related to how we interact and relate with the Farm Bill and how we can maximize that. kind of wrapping up here, wetlands, we've just completed a assessment of the State Wetland Conservation Act that was requested of us by the governor. That report has been finished and submitted, and we'll certainly try to make that available to the committee here in the coming days. Some of the other things in terms of wetlands that I think we're seeing is increased development pressure statewide. It's that kind of that suburbanization of rural areas, and that's resulting in more appeals and more enforcement for us. The Corps of Engineers has a new policy on mitigation, which may require some changes. We're trying to work through most of those through a memorandum of understanding and trying to develop some better regulatory simplification so that federal program and state program are, in essence, look almost the same to a landowner out there. And then I think also the quality of our restored wetlands. I think we're starting to see some long-term management issues, particularly in the area of invasive species control, and something that I think we're going to have to start beginning to look at in the future. And then we're also beginning to embark on a state wetland restoration strategy in partnership with DNR, and that's going to come forward ultimately with some policy recommendations. Over the last 2 years, our board has facilitated a drainage work group. It was an outgrowth of legislation a couple of years ago, which asked for a study to be completed on the application and enforcement of ditch buffers. That group is finishing up its work. We're going to meet for the last time on January 16th. I fully expect that there will be a number of policy recommendations coming forward on that regarding things like records preservation, modernization, enhancing authorities of ditch authorities to implement buffers, looking at some of the compliance and enforcement, and then recognizing some need for things like updating our drainage manual and providing some additional state resources in the way of technical assistance, as well as I think that group has worked well and has expressed an interest to continue to meet and deal with drainage issues in a very proactive manner as we move forward. And then lastly, just to wrap up, a 2006 work item of the Office of Legislative, the Office of Legislative Auditor, was a study or an evaluation of watershed management. The focus of that, as many of you are well aware, was our local watersheds organizations well managed? To what extent is there overlap and duplication? Is Bowser providing adequate oversight? And how well are things coordinated? That draft report will be presented to the House Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee to you folks on January 25th. And we look forward to a lot of discussion after the report is done and as we work through some of the ideas and things that will be forthcoming in that document. And with that, I thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today and to give our agency overview.
Well, thank you, Mr. Thomas. Are there any questions at all from the members? Okay. Any further comments at all from Mr. Woods or Mr. Jasky? Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Thomas.
Thank you. I left him speak for you.
Okay, next on the agenda, we're going to have an overview of another agency that we're going to be hearing from a great deal during the course of this session from the Department of Natural Resources. We have both Mr. Bob Meyer here today and also Mr. Mark Holston, Commissioner of the DNR. If you could come forward and please state your name and position for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Mark Holston. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. I wanted to come in here today and just introduce myself to all of you. I see some familiar faces that I've had a working relationship with for a number of years and some new faces. So I just wanted to come in here and just take a few minutes and introduce our staff who's going to be around the Capitol so you get a chance to put faces with names. There's been, for those of you who've been around, we've got some new faces. There's been some changes within our agency, and so with that, I just thought I'd take a few minutes and just go through some of the changes that we're going through. But for those of you who are new, I'll give you a little bit of background. I spent 10 years on your side of the aisle, on your side of the table on the microphone. Had the opportunity to serve for 10 years. After my sixth re-election, or sixth term, the governor appointed me as deputy commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. I spent 4 years as the Environment Finance Chair. Representative Bogini is the chair right now. And so that's how I transitioned and became a DNR employee. So I have a very good understanding of a lot of the things you're going to be going through as members. I bring to the agency a different perspective than the agency has traditionally had. And I bring a different perspective to you, being a former member and now on this side of the bureaucracy. Being able to answer some of the questions that you are going to have over the next several months, and we will help you in any way we can to achieve the goals and objectives you're trying to do. Give you some of the history, most of the issues that you're going to be dealing with, whether they're in your individual legislative districts, whether they're within your region, or on some of the policies that you're going to be trying to tackle in the upcoming session and years. They have a history, and most of them have a legislative history, and that affects, that history is important to how we got to where we are today on many different issues. So over time, as you have questions, if you have questions in your district, we have the resources to be able to talk through, help you, and deal with some of those conflicts that you, each and every one of you, will be dealing with. We have some exciting things going on within the agency, and we have some exciting things going on within the state. And the opportunities before us are probably unparalleled in state history. We also have some conflicts, and we also have some problems that we're going to need your help to sort through, and the Finance Committee's help to sort through, to take this state to the next level in terms of the work that we do. For those of you who have been around before, traditionally the deputy commissioner has done the lion's share of the presentations, both policy and budget. We are going to change that format this year, and we have promoted Bob Meyer to an assistant commissioner position. Bob was the legislative affairs director over the years, and has serviced the agency and the legislature very well, in my opinion, over the last couple of years, and so we've elevated him. So you will be, Bob will be the face of the agency predominantly here at the legislature for you throughout this year. Traditionally, the commissioner doesn't make a lot of appearances up here, but I, you know, in reevaluating the last 4 years with Commissioner Merriam and myself and how we managed it, I think it we may have done a little bit of disservice to the agency and to you in not having him up here more. So I'm going to be, you'll see me around the Capitol. You'll see me in your offices. I don't plan to come before the committees unless, Mr. Chair, you have specific interest or you need my, you need me up here. But I'll be available. You'll see me routinely around the halls and stopping into your offices just to check in on things. With that, I'd just like to introduce the folks that intimately you should be dealing with throughout the years. Lori Martinson is taking over as deputy commissioner. Lori served the agency as an operations manager. She managed across disciplines and project specific items for us. She was also a legislative director for the DNR for a little while. We asked her to step into the Division of Trails and Waterways as we were dealing with ATV trail development issues, as we were dealing with legislative audits on our grant processes for snowmobile trails and ATV club organizations. We asked her to take a look at, she reorganized the Division of Trails and Waterways, she reorganized the grant programs and brought them up to an accounting standard that you expect from the agency today. And she's done a lot of fine work. She worked in the commissioner's office over the last couple months in an acting assistant capacity, and she will do a fine job by us as the deputy. We have not replaced Assistant Commissioner Moore's position yet, the Assistant Commissioner of Operations. We expect to do that in the upcoming weeks. Well, actually hope to do that in the next week or two. get that locked down, to get that stability in the commissioner's office. And Bob is going to take over legislative affairs. As I look around, I want to go through our directors to our individual divisions that Bob will be walking you through in the overview. Over here I've got Kent Lacosmo, director of trails, of our waters division. As you deal with the clean water legacy, groundwater, surface water, he'll be drainage issues, whatever you're going to be dealing with, he'll be instrumental in that. Let's see, directors, I've got my regional director from the central region, Joe Kurchinka. I would not try to spell it.
Joe's not that hard, J-O-E.
I wish it was that simple. But we have, for those of you, we have four, well, Bob will get into that. We have four specific regions with regional offices. Joe heads up our central region here in St. Paul. Dave Shad is the director of our Fish and Wildlife Division. So those of you dealing with game and fish wildlife issues, will be dealing with Dave. Colonel Mike Hamm is the director of our Enforcement Division. Marty Vadas is the director of Lands and Minerals. So when we start talking about land, asset management, real estate, mining, those are going to be many of the topics we'll be talking with him about. Seated in front of Marty is Denise Anderson. She is our OMBS individual. She is ultimately involved on the budget side and development of our budgets and for the Finance Committee's presentations. Forrest Bow is newly appointed director of our Trails and Waterways Division. So for snowmobile trails, ATVs, canoe routes, bike trails, we have a lot of there's a lot of legislative interest on bike trails. He manages that arena. I got Bob Tomlinson here, who is, well, I can't remember your position now. You're the assistant director under Dave Epperle, who is the director of our forestry divisions, but Bob is here at the Capitol most often for the forestry division, so in the forestry capacity. Seated in front of them, I've got Cortland Nelson, who is the director of our parks division. So those of you who have state parks in your arena or want to have a state park in your area, careful. We'll have some discussions about that. He's the one you're going to want to go to, and we'll have some discussions about that. Cortland comes to us from the state of Utah, where he was the director of the parks division there during the Olympics. So he was a great find for us to bring into the state and a great resource. Next to him is Lee Fanmuller. Lee is the director of our Ecological Services Division, providing a lot of the non-game research environmental review functions, exotic program that I know you'll be talking a lot about this year. On our director's level, I've got directors. I go back over. I've got Elaine Johnson, who is the head of our Management Resources. That is our business, or I mean our buildings, our fleet, IT components are under her shop. We want to talk about fleet management. We probably have one of the top managers of fleet management in the state of Minnesota in our arena. We're very proud of some of the things we've been able to do in that arena. Next to her is Denise Legato, head of our HR department. And that will summarize our directors, I believe. Okay. Chair, good luck.
Thank you, Mr. Holston, and thank you for coming. And Mr. Meyer, would you like to introduce yourself?
For those of you who don't know me, I'm Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner of Government Relations, Policy Development for the Department of Natural Resources. You will know me very closely. I'll see a lot of you every day. I'll be giving you my cards and contact information individually. I'll set up appointments with you. Anything that you need, consider myself the first point of contact for help getting through or answering questions with the Department of Natural Resources or anything else that may concern you related to our mission and goals. So with that, my presentation is only about 2 hours, so I'm going to try to get through it as quickly as possible. If you do have questions, we can answer them at that time, and hopefully we can get out of here at a reasonable time for you. I'd like to thank Commissioner Holston for introducing everybody and everybody for being here. This is just going to be an overview, kind of what we call a DNR 101. I'm going to talk about a little bit of funding, go over the funding real quickly, because we'll be focusing on a lot of that in the budget committees, but give you an overview of that. And also start to introduce you to some of our measurable outcomes that we've been pulling together for quite some time. Since about 2000, we've been tracking and reporting on measurable results on about 90 key indicators that are in a strategic conservation agenda. The finance committee received this morning, and we'll get copies to the rest of you folks who don't have that. We're on the policy committee here at the end of the meeting if you're interested. The overview is going to include the DNR organization, talk about our missions, organizational structure, funding, get into some of the major issues and drivers of change that we're facing, and also talk about our programs and the delivery of conservation results, looking at some core functions, budget, and strategic priorities for each of the eight divisions that we talked about. Our mission is a pretty complex one, kind of. We work with the citizens of Minnesota to conserve and manage the state's natural resources, provide outdoor recreation opportunities, and provide for commercial uses of natural resources in ways that create sustainable quality of life. You can see some of the photos down there, and sometimes people wonder how they all fit together, but they do. This is kind of the way we look at things, and this is the way we look at things when we're making decisions within the department. The three major drivers are economic use, recreational use, and natural resources conservation. And you can see in the middle of those three circles is the DNR. We need to find management solutions that address the conflicts and interdependencies between these three areas. The conservation and the use of our natural resources really provide for access and the healthy use of our resources that are there. Forest management is a good example of this. Managing the forest for timber, for economic resources, also provides habitat for wildlife and also uses, recreational uses for hiking, hunting, and wildlife habitat. So it's a way that we look at things and how we try to deal with our issues. It's a little bit different than other agencies that are out there rather than focusing on a single mission statement. To do this, we have to create a lot of partnerships, so we have a lot of partnerships. Previously, to come into the Department of Natural Resources, I worked for the Office of Environmental Assistance for about 10 years, dealing with solid waste and hazardous waste recycling issues. I was amazed and pleasantly surprised to find the number of partnerships and people we have to work with at the Department of Natural Resources. I have to say I didn't work with a lot of stakeholders at the OEA, but coming here, I literally have dozens and sometimes tens of dozens of partnership groups to work with, and the support that we have is very strong throughout the state. Likewise, sometimes we have that many stakeholders who want to work against us sometimes, but we try to deal with those conflicts the best we can and resolve those conflicts in a mutual beneficial way. Balancing multiple interests, working together to address those competing interests in ways that ensure sustainable use while protecting the environment is really what we're all about. The Commissioner talked about our organizational structure and our regions in particular. We have four regions throughout the state, Northwest, Northeast, Central, and Southern, with their offices being in Grand Rapids in the Northeast region, Bemidji in the Northwest, St. Paul in the Central region, and New Ulm in the Southern region. Just briefly, our organizational structure, you can see the Commissioner's office consisting of the Commissioner, Deputy, myself, and our Assistant Commissioner of Operations. Then we go into the operations side of things with regional operations and the eight divisions, and then operations support under administration, which is touching all of those divisions as well. I'm going to quickly go through some of our budget information just to help you get a background of what we're talking about with these. We have several different funds within the department, and this graph here represents all of those funds and the direct, open, and statutory appropriations that we have. Our past total appropriation was $680 million, roughly. And you can see the percentages there. The Game and Fish Fund, which is primarily made up of revenues from those licenses. Natural Resources Funds were funds collected for specific purposes go into. Our Special Revenue Fund, which includes a variety of different fund services that we provide. Federal funds, 5.9%. Environment and Natural Resources Fund, the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund money goes into there. other funds such as gifts and donations, and then 32.6% of the budget is made up of general fund allocation. If you look at the Game and Fish Fund, just briefly, $108 million, 59.560% of that is made up of license fees. A small portion of this is general fund. Actually, none of this is general fund, I'm sorry. $36.9 or $37 million from the federal courts, Fish and Wildlife, Pittman and Robertson, and the Wildlife Parole Fund. Lottery and loose sales tax, which we'll get into here in a second. Stamp surcharges, other revenues, permits, and sales of natural resources. This is a large share of the funds for the Fish and Wildlife Division. The Natural Resources Fund appropriations, all of these are the different licenses and permits that people buy, ATVs, the non-game wildlife money from the checkoff in there, snowmobiles, boat registration, state parks. Again, you'll see the lottery and loo numbers there, off-highway vehicles. These are where the specific statutory accounts go into these, this account to be appropriated out by you folks. Lottery and loo sales tax receipts. The lottery and loo program, for every dollar in lottery sales that are sold, the lottery sets aside 6.5% or 6.5 cents of in-sales loo money and remits that amount to the Commissioner of Revenue. By law, 27.57% of those funds go to the general fund, and the remaining 72.43% are credited to the Game and Fish Fund and the Natural Resources Fund used for natural resource projects as specified in statute. You can see here 50% of that goes into the Heritage Enhancement Fund, with the other half in the Natural Resources Fund being divided amongst metro parks, state parks and trails, local grants, and then a portion of that goes to the zoo. It's a rather complicated thing to work through, but I want to make sure you guys understand when you hear lottery and loo or heritage enhancement dollars, you have a basic understanding where they come from. Some of the major challenges we're facing right now can be summed up in this graphic pretty simply, I think. If you look at the landscape change, habitat loss and fragmentation that we're dealing with, the long-term issue of climate change that's out there, trying to figure out what we're going to be like in 50, 60 years is challenging for us, but we need to think about that as we manage a lot of land for the state of Minnesota, hold a lot of land in trust for the school trust, and also we provide recreational opportunities for millions of people. On the bottom are those people, the natural resources, and people that are out there looking for public access and connections to the wilderness, or the natural resources areas, I should say. In the middle are some of the challenges that we see, the changing development patterns of our forest fragmentation, development in the urban areas, agricultural changes, the shift that we're looking at in biofuel production, for example, I think presents a lot of exciting opportunities for the department in the way we manage our lands and the benefits that we can receive. Harmful and invasive species and disease really provide issues for us that we need to deal with that will limit people's ability or limit the ability for people to recreate in those areas. And clean water and sustainable use of our waters are really important for us to maintain our populations. And, as we all know, everything kind of revolves around the water. I mentioned the Strategic Conservation Agenda. Our last edition came out in March of 2007, or I should say June of 2006. And our next edition is going to come out in March of 2007. 90 indicators and targets that are there. Clearly stating priorities in specific and measurable terms. We have measurable results, and we'll be focusing a lot on this document as we go through our budget preparation and development, showing you what we can do, what we expect to do with the dollars that we're hoping to get in the coming biennium. It's also on our website. If you go on our website, there's a search box right on there. You can search Conservation Agenda. It'll pull you up into all of those past issues and the current issue. We talked about all of our programs and our DNR directors. In a way, it's a complex organization, but having all of these features in one organization really help us organize and deal with the issues that we must deal with every day. Going into fish and wildlife, DNR serves 2.1 million anglers per year, about 580,000 hunters and trappers, and 2.2 million wildlife viewers. We also work with 1,700 commercial fishery operators and over 2,000 resorts and related tourist businesses. Some of the core functions that we deal with in fish and wildlife are the conservation and restoration of fish and wildlife populations, making sure that we support and keep the fish and wildlife recreation we have, and that deals with the conducting and the fish and wildlife inventory, research and monitoring, fish stocking, and technical assistance and education. Just as an aside, we have, you know, right now about 1,400 wildlife management areas with 1.2 million acres that are out there for people to use. So we have a lot of land that we manage for people to participate in those activities on. Just quickly, the budget last biennium, about $167 million, you can see. One thing for you to note on these slides as we go through, the amount of general fund each division gets, it varies substantially, and that is something that you'll be dealing with as we go through, especially in the finance committee, because you'll be dealing with the general fund appropriations in most cases. The rest of the funds are funds that we generate through our activities, or the residents of the state of Minnesota paid to participate in recreational activities, your licensing of your snowmobiles, boats, fishing license, hunting license, things of that nature. One of the critical trends, and you're going to see this in each division, these highlights that we have here, that we're tracking in Fish and Wildlife Division, is habitat loss and fragmentation, as I mentioned. This slide you may have seen before, it's one that we use a lot in a lot of different presentations, just shows the loss of the wetland and drainage issues that have occurred. This is a 50 square mile picture, map if you want to call it that, of Jackson County from 1884 to 1994. And it just shows how much water used to be out there and how much is there now. Something you're going to hear a lot about, we talked a little bit about in the Senate just yesterday, is the Working Lands Initiative, trying to unite and work together with the people who own the land and partners, conservation partners, to create large 4 to 9 square mile complexes for breeding waterfowl and waterfowl habitat for breeding ducks in the spring so they can come back to Minnesota every year. You can see the shaded area on the map represents the best areas of the state. This is primarily the Prairie Pothole region for establishing this high quality prairie wetland complex. Kind of a tongue twister at this time of day. Here's an example of what we're trying to do with this program. Taking the existing programs that are out there, working with Bowser, NRCS, National Conservation Resource Service, I think that's right, trying to create these complexes. You can see, starting on the WMA on the left, or my right, I should say, we have a WMA, Conservation Reserve Enhancement Easement, Grasslands Program, Fish and Wildlife Service Easement, Wetlands Easement, and Waterfowl Production Area. The beauty of this project is a lot of this land, or the majority of this land, stays in private ownership. We don't have to take ownership of it. We can work with our partners to work with the landowners to create the habitat. Sometimes there's access to this land for hunting, sometimes there's not, depending on the ownership. But it provides the habitat we need to get the populations where we want them. Some of the conservation targets that we have related to this, our long-term goal, just for the duck plan, I should say, is to protect an additional 2 million acres of prairie wetlands and grasslands, and that's, you know, looking out 50 years. We have an annual target we're working towards, the protection of 40,000 wetland and grassland acres through all of the partners each year. The creation and the redrafting of the Farm Bill in Washington, D.C. in this coming season is going to be critical to our success in doing these types of activities. There's a lot of funding opportunities there for us, and we're working closely with our stakeholders out there to try to maximize the benefits for the state of Minnesota. Priority highlight really quickly, I talked about this a little bit, just our wildlife management areas. In the past 2 bonding cycles, we've received $24 million for funding for wildlife management areas. It's just an unprecedented amount of bonding for those programs, and we've spent to date about $12 million of that money, and by the end of this biennium, or by the end of this fiscal year, I should say, we'll probably have most of that money expended or encumbered for purchases that are out there. We had a Citizens Advisory Committee that recommended the purchasing or the acquisition of 700,000 acres of additional wildlife management lands in the next 50 years. You can see who belonged to that and worked with us on that, but that's another long-term goal we're trying to reach for. Whether we can get there or not, it's going to be challenging, but we can, through the work and initiatives of other and other opportunities, try to get at least the habitat part of that taken care of. Moving into forestry, the Minnesota Forest Products support, or forest, I should say, support a $6.9 billion forest products industry. Also, the benefits from wildlife habitat, clean water, and recreation are just something that is a true Minnesota heritage for many people throughout the state. The core functions of the department, or the Division of Forestry, I should say, the number one priority within the whole DNR is wildfire protection. So that relates to the protection of people, property, and natural resources from wildfire harm. We also manage 4.5 million acres of state forests for the multiple values we spoke about earlier. Helping landowners and communities to restore and improve forests is a key part to keeping our forests healthy and our forest products industries surviving. Producing tree seedlings for conservation planting, and also implementing the Sustainable Forest Resources Act, which you're going to hear more about in a policy initiative coming from us this year to remove the sunset provision in that act, which is set to sunset this year. So it really established the groundwork for all the sustainable forest practices that we're undertaking today. As I mentioned, wildfire, it's a huge issue to us. It's our most important. I'm sure you're all aware of the Cali Lake fire that took place this summer. July 14th to the 22nd, 32,000 acres at a cost of $11.3 million to manage that fire. The fire season is interesting for the department because we have to shift a lot of our work when the fire comes up and sometimes takes it from other high priority work. An issue you're going to see and hear and hopefully you'll be aware about is the workforce issues that not only the DNR but all state government and everywhere is facing right now. Within the next 5 years, we may lose up to 20% of our wildfire expertise. Mm-hmm. So it's a concern we have in bringing in new people, recruitment and retention, not only for our staff, but for our users within our resources are something we're very concerned about. Major effort of success that we'd like to celebrate and talk about is forest certification. Minnesota has the largest SFI and FSC certification certificates issued in the United States. And really this ensures that our forests are managed and harvested in a sustainable manner. There's many, many end product markets. Time Warner, for example, will only buy certified timber to produce their wood for their magazine. So we want to make sure that our forests are managed appropriately to maximize the value. On this slide, it just shows our expenditures and budgets for the past biennium. General fund, 53%, is something to keep an eye on there. Also, other funds that are really small. The Natural Resources Fund, this doesn't have the Forest Management Investment Account, which we'll talk about later on, but the general fund portion of forestry was larger until we created the Forest Management Investment Account, which takes the receipts for managing those timbers, put them into the account to help us deal with the costs associated with that. I spoke of private non-industrial forest land. This just kind of shows the breakout timber volume harvested, or sold, I should say, by ownership. You can see by far the most wood that we've sold, almost double in some cases, is on private lands. Working with those private landowners to make sure that they're managing their land in appropriate ways shows that we have research that shows that people we work with to get them in stewardship plans will harvest more wood and manage their forests more sustainably than people we don't work with. So it's a priority highlight that we have here is our forest stewardship program. Working with those individual landowners to develop plans, our 2007 target is to complete 65,000 acres of those plans. Our 2008 proposed target at this point in time is to complete 150,000 acres. And the long-term target is to try to establish 2.3 million acres of those forest stewardship plans. Kind of aggressive, but we need to have those kind of goals to get us where we need to go. Land parcelization, I talked about that and our challenges there. Diminishing the value for habitat, decreasing the ability to manage our forests as large blocks to produce timber for recreational resources, provides for decreased access for recreation, decreased access for timber harvesting, as I talked about, and impaired water quality. The one thing that's not on this slide are the costs that this also creates for counties and local units of government, for police, fire, ambulance, those types of activities. Oftentimes we see communities are looking for the short-term gains, and they'll divide land and sell land and things like that. For a short-term gain, they think they're going to make property tax revenue off it. There's research, and there's actually a tool that you can get that will show you the long-term cost of managing that land as people go out and build and live on these 40-acre parcels, what the cost will be for infrastructure, for services that you need to provide. Forest Legacy Partnership, it's something a lot of you are aware of, putting conservation easements on these lands that are out there. Our target to acquire 75,000 acres of permanent forest conservation easements through this program by the end of 2008. Right now we have about 50,000 acres pending. We're hoping to close that deal before the end of this first quarter, fiscal year 07, which will be a huge accomplishment for us. Moving into ecological services, Commissioner Holston was a little bit incorrect on the impaired water stuff. Kent works on it, but really ecological services does the majority of our impaired waters activities that we have in conjunction with waters, but providing the technical assistance for managing services, environmental reviews there, protecting and restoring native plant and wildlife communities, regulating activities that impact native plants and wildlife communities, and collecting and managing the ecological data. Just as an aside note, this is an amazing stat to me, but 2 million Minnesotans actively watch, read, or photograph wildlife for 54% participation rate. And I guess we're number two in the nation, so that's a good thing to think about as you're looking out your windows when we get some snow, hopefully. You can see the funding for ecological services, general fund 20.5%. Environment Natural Resources Fund, 6.6%. Special revenue, 12.6%. So the total is about $43.5 million. And here's what I was talking about, Clean Water Legacy. Ecological Services is responsible for coordinating with the PCA, Department of Agriculture, and the Board of Water Resources and local municipal governments to help identify impaired waters, develop the total maximum daily load plans, implement those plans, and protect all waters of the state. A large part of this is providing the technical assistance, the daily technical assistance to our stakeholders who call and have a question about how to do things the right way, what's the best way to restore water, what works, what doesn't work, and working with all of our stakeholders throughout the state. The critical trend highlight on this for this division, invasive species. We're going to be talking a little bit about invasive species as well this session. Native plant animal species are displaced, whether they be plants or terrestrial. Habitat for fish and wildlife can be degraded. Water-based recreational activities limited. Industrial water use is impacted. You can see on the bottom, my bottom right there, the zebra mussels, the spiny water flea, the lamprey, and then there's some invasive plants there. It looks like milfoil. We also will be talking about at some point in time, I hope, Asian carp, big head carp that are presenting an issue for us. We need to try to deal with those issues as well. This graphic shows the amount of water bodies that have become infested per year over the years. And our target is to maintain the high levels of awareness and try to limit the spread of Eurasian water milfoil to no more than 10 new lakes each year. The spread of milfoil primarily comes from boaters and recreational users moving from one body of water to the other, as with a lot of other invasive species. They're transported from one place to another. And through education and trying to work with the people who are moving boats, snowmobiles, trailers, whatever it may be, is one of our best methods to try to stop the spread. So we're going to have a bill that deals with some invasive species issues, hopefully to be in front of you in the coming weeks. Moving into the Waters Division, the core functions of the Department of Waters is to maintain the physical integrity of Minnesota waters by collecting water data and coordinating technical analysis, regulating activities through permitting, and providing support to local unit of governments on water management issues and protecting public safety. Our shoreline management ordinances programs are located in this division. Also, we coordinate our flood hazard mitigation grants program funded through bonding through this division. Just a little bit of a side, you know, roughly 12,000 lakes in Minnesota, 10 million acres of wetlands, 90,000 miles of rivers, and 750 wells for groundwater level monitoring that we participate in. This division is particularly heavily funded by the general fund, with 78% of the funding coming from the general fund, small amount from fees, and about 18% from federal funds. This shows the city of Oslo in Minnesota during the Red River flood of 1997. The costs for dealing with the flood of Red River, I believe, was about $1.5 billion overall, state, federal, and other local units of government funding for the cleanup and restoration of those activities. The flooding, you know, since 1997, we had floods in 2001, 2002, 2004, and our flood hazard mitigation program, though receiving hundreds of millions of dollars in bonding in the past bonding cycles, still we'll need more funds to create do the work that needs to be done, moving houses out of the floodplain, creating barriers, and reestablishing areas that need to be reestablished. Another strategic highlight relating to waters is the water resources information that they deal with. The Division of Waters works in developing county geological atlases and regional hydrologic assessment programs. Use this to find reliable water resources and manage water and land sustainably. Currently, we have 14 atlases and 5 assessments completed. You can see the completion in progress for the county atlases and regional hydrological assessments on the map. These areas include 76% of the state's population and 39% of the state's area, where most of the demands for water are right now. But we're continuing to move and work throughout the state. Moving on to enforcement, the Department of Enforcement deals with our public safety and education and safety programs, game and fish law enforcement, resource protection, recreation enforcement, the safety training and education, public safety and service. Just to give you an idea, we have 271,000 registered snowmobiles in the state, 309,000 registered recreational vehicles, and 40,000 plus students each year participate in our safety training programs, be it the ATV, snowmobile, firearm safety, boat and water safety programs. Since the inception in 1955, the firearm safety program, we've graduated over a million students through that program alone. We celebrated our millionth student last year, so it's kind of a huge accomplishment for us. Total budget about $61 million, coming from various sources, 61.5% from the Game and Fish Fund, small amount of federal dollars, small 11% from the general fund. So the highlight trend for this division is really the enforcement responsibilities and staffing. Again, dealing with our aging workforce, 2003 we had 40 vacancies in it throughout the state in our enforcement division. Right now we're at 10 vacancies. We have another academy coming up. We're hoping to be at full complement. But then, of course, you can never catch up. It's kind of like chasing your tail. But for the first time in a long time, our enforcement staff is where it needs to be closely. And it's a huge commitment to us continuing those academies and making sure we have the people on the ground to enforce the activities we need to have monitored. One highlight you may have heard or seen in the news this past year, our wetland protection flights that we've done, identifying and locating wetland destruction throughout the state. 2005, we started in southern Minnesota. We expanded in 2006 with the media reports and enhanced educational media coverage. And throughout that program, we've identified 516 possible impacts. And just people knowing that we're out there doing this is going to make them kind of think twice before they try to fill in a wetland or do a little dig work within a public water body without a permit. Is typically what the problems are. People will go in and try to fill by their lakeshore or try to excavate by their lakeshore without permits, and that's how we see what's going on. We'll work with the local units of government, typically the Water and Soil Conservation District, to identify other issues that are out there as well, and we do the enforcement for the Wetland Conservation Act in most cases. DNR Lands and Minerals, I haven't mentioned that we manage 5.5 million acres of scale. This division helps us with the real estate transactions involved on those. Manage mineral activities on about 12 million acres of state-owned mineral rights, and enforce mine land reclamation regulations at taconite and peat mining operations, affecting over a quarter of a million acres of public and private land. The taconite industry in Minnesota, we're number one in the nation. It's a $1.2 billion industry currently. We're sixth in sand and gravel production, and third in horticultural peat production. The Lands and Minerals Division, you can see right now, their budget's a little skewed because the $54.1 million in this slide include the PILT payments, representing 61.1%. We talked a little bit about PILT this morning in the Environment Finance Committee. That's payment in lieu of taxes on public lands or lands that are acquired by the state. Chapter 477A.11 to .145 deal with PILT. And it's a payment we make every year to the local units of government, basically the counties. Right now it's 0.75% of the appraised value of land, or $3 per acre adjusted for inflation. The last adjustment on that was $4.252 per acre. Most counties have elected every 5 years you can decide which way you want to be paid, and then you're locked in for that 5 years, just as we do the appraisal every 5 years. Most counties throughout the state now are on the 0.75% of appraised land. Fiscal year 09, we're looking at, let me do it this way. In fiscal year 06, the PILT payments were $13.4 million. Due to the increasing land values, in fiscal year 09, that amount will rise to $20.7 million. So it's an issue that's out there. It continues to grow and escalate. We understand that. We realize that it's a payment that needs to be made. Something we're discussing right now is possibly, perhaps, we need to talk with you folks, but maybe this PILT payment program should be with a lot of local government aid programs for out of the land and minerals budget. It does skew their budget kind of drastically. So you see they received some Game of Fish Fund dollars, special revenue, 20% general fund, about 2% from other funds that are out there. The global metal demand, this is we talked about a little bit, as the Asian countries begin their industrial revolution, so to speak. The price of raw materials have skyrocketed. And for members on the range, the development that's occurring right there and the potential mining activities up there are a lot of economic activity for people up there right now. You can see just the cost of copper, zinc, and nickel, how they've skyrocketed just in the past year. So it's something we're keeping an eye on, and it presents demands for the division to deal with those pressures. One of our priorities is mineral lease income, and the measurement that we have here is trying to maximize mineral lease revenues to the permanent school fund, permanent university trust fund, and local units of government that have tax forfeited mineral rights. You can see the projections that we have here, with the light blue being the permanent school fund, the pink or salmon, if you want to call it that, being permanent university fund. The light green is the tax forfeit lands and minerals, and then the dark is the other land. So this kind of goes from 1997 to 2009. You can see the blips that are there, but it shows the strength and the growth that's been happening in the past year. Moving on to Parks and Recreation, core functions of the Division of Parks and Rec, preserve, restore, and interpret the state's natural and cultural resources, provide natural-based recreational opportunities for current and future generations, and operate, maintain, and manage 67 state parks and six recreation areas. We have over 8 million annual state park visitors, $14.5 million in annual revenue. Ten of Minnesota's top 35 tourism spots are in state parks, and one in three Minnesotans each year visit a state park. So a lot of your constituents are our customers, not only in parks, but all across the board. $80 million a year, or fiscal year 06-07 expenditures budget, 48% from the general fund. You can see the natural resources fund at 35.3. That's where the receipts from parking, from admissions and permits and thing, entrance fees go. Special revenue, federal, environment, natural resources, and just a small amount of other funds. The critical trends that are facing state parks right now are the expanded development and land use changes around parks and invasive species, as we talked about, threatening our natural communities that our parks are made up of. The recreational demand is that as our population ages and becomes more diverse, they're looking for different experiences. One of the things we were able to do last bonding cycle is establish some of those experiences that we're working on right now through some camper cabins you'll see in the top picture there, and working with Representative Bill's constituents and making sure that they're comfortable with us building those in certain areas is very important to us. So talking about the conflicts that we deal with, we need to make sure that we don't come in and provide services where other people are providing services as well. So it's something we're very aware of. Park features, visitors highly value park beauty, facilities, natural resources, trails, and education. And that's something that we need to manage. This graphic here just shows how we're protecting and managing our critical natural and cultural resources in state parks with some targets there. This shows the acres of habitat and prescribed fire and active restorations in the state park system right now. Trails and waterways, 1.3 million miles of state bike trails. State trails including almost 500 miles of paved bike trails in the state. We ranked fourth in the nation for total boats registered. 1,500 boat access sites throughout the states and 26 designated canoe and boating routes. The Division of Trails and Waterways works to create recreation opportunities through a system of trails, water recreation and facilities, including non-motorized water rec and motorized recreation activities. Budget here, you can see small 3.8% general fund. Again, snowmobile, all your registrations, cross-country ski passes, things like that, go into the Natural Resources Fund to fund the activities that are there. Critical trend, the increased motor vehicle registrations. In 1984, we had 12,000 ATVs registered. Today, we have 240,000 in 2006. Providing recreational opportunities for those folks while also providing hiking, biking, and non-motorized routes is something that we take very seriously and we work very hard on doing. Increasing the demand for biking and walking and hiking trails. 29% of Minnesotans are bicyclists. That's a hard word to say right now. 54% of Minnesotans walk and hike. On the bottom there you can see the range of activities that trails and waterways deal with. Hopefully we'll have some snow sometimes. A few of those snow things. One of the highlights, public water accesses, you can see our target there, to acquire new access sites in statewide with a special emphasis on the Mississippi River and our large lakes over 5,000 acres. Operations support, Commissioner Holson spoke of this briefly, it's the Commissioner's Office, our Office of Management and Budget Services, or OMBS, Human Resources, Management Resources, Information and Education, and our Regional Operations. This division provides leadership and critical services to our other divisions to support their natural resource management goals, integrated policy and budget, asset management, information technology, safe, productive workforce, and providing for fund integrity is our key functions there. You can see the various funding sources, 22% general fund for this division, or for this area. Critical trend highlights, integrated resource management. Extensive collaboration and integrated solutions to complex natural resource problems are the only way we can solve these things. Taking the considerations of all of our stakeholders together and working through those issues, making sure that they can agree or at least be comfortable with decisions that we have is very important. Adaptive management is something that we work very closely with. Advances in science, technology, and information management are increasingly needed to address the natural resource challenges. Our aging workforce we spoke of, more than 44% of the DNR's workforce is over 50 years old. Accountability to results. Citizens, as you all know, have higher expectations for government performance and fiscal integrity, and it's something we strive for and take very seriously. Some of our recent organizational successes: the conservation agenda with the measurable results we have. Fleet management. We have a completely debt-free fleet department right now, in large part thanks to Elaine Johnson and her staff. We were paying over $500,000 a year just in interest for the payments on our fleet. We purchase our fleets with cash now, bill them back to the division so we do not borrow money for our fleet management. That was something that when Commissioner Mary and Deputy Commissioner Holston came in, they took very seriously trying to get that taken care of. So that's $500,000 more we can spend on conservation results. Attorney General, the same way. People were going to the Attorney General's office for some rather mundane questions. They came in and said, hey, read the statutes. The laws are there. We try to do some of those determinations ourselves. We saved a lot of money there. Went to the new telephone system that you have here using the internet protocol. Saved us about $120,000 a year. Our dedicated accounts trying to protect some of those divisions, forestry with the forest management investment account. Minerals, we had created the minerals management account for 2 years. And the facilities management account, making sure divisions understood the cost of the services that they were asking for and were responsible for covering those costs, really helped us control our budget issues over the past. Just in summary here, the big drivers that we're facing right now: habitat loss and fragmentation, clean water and sustainable use of those waters, public access to natural resources, invasive species, the changing forest products industry, which we'll be discussing in Representative Dill's Game Fish and Forestry subdivision, and here also, I hope, OHV use management and regulation, the changing recreation participation, climate change, that the issues that we're facing in the long term out there, alternative energy biofuels possibilities that we have out there, also something we're working very closely with. And this, as you think of the DNR, maybe just pull this out, stick it on your wall. This is kind of how I hope you can think about all of our issues that we deal with, these resource connections. Timber management provides habitat and wildlife viewing opportunities, forest cover, water quality, habitat protection for water, fishing opportunities. All of our activities that we do, economic uses, recreation opportunities, they're all connected. And you'll hopefully understand that as we walk through these things. But, you know, the yin and the yang of things, or action, reaction, however you want to look at it. The things that we do in one area of our department hopefully help support and enhance the things that we do in other areas. So, with that, I apologize for being so long-winded.
No. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Meyer. You did very well. Any questions at all for Mr. Meyer? Yes, Representative Breinart.
Just a real quick one, Mr. Chair and Mr. Meyer. I'm wondering, Mr. Meyer, about the Farm Bill. Both you and Mr. Thomas mentioned the importance of the 2007 Farm Bill, and I'm wondering if you'll communicate both your content and strategies in terms of communicating with our federal legislators to us, so that if, should you need our support or assistance, we could, you know, be involved as appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Meyer.
We will be working on that, and actually I know there's another hearing coming up in the Finance Committee next week talking about the Farm Bill in particular.
Okay.
So we have been working previously before the changes in Washington, thinking there was just going to be reauthorization of it. We have a working group between the agencies. We need to reconvene that and make sure that we work together more closely. But we are, and we will communicate those strategies to you.
Any other questions? Okay, well, thanks again, Mr. Meyer, and we will be adjourning until next Tuesday. We're going to be taking up the Great River or the Great Lake Compact on Tuesday. We're also going to be hearing from the Pollution Control Agency next week on final NAPA the Thursday, and I'm sure Mr. Meyer will be here again sometime soon to testify again. Thanks again for coming, and the meeting is adjourned.